Hi, my name is Dylan Raymond, and this is Policy Streams. I talk to people all over the world to hear their life stories. Today, I am speaking with Adila, who is a classmate here at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy. Adila is very passionate about racial equality and gender equality. And recently, Adila was elected as the president of Bridging Gap. So Adila is kindly giving us some time today to talk to me about it. And actually, Adila, first of all, want to say thanks so much for making the time to be here to chat with me today. But let me start with Bridging Gap. What exactly is it?
Thanks, Dylan, for having me. For those of you who don't know, Bridging Gap stands for Bridging Gender and Policy, and it is a student-led group at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy in the National University of Singapore. In fact, I think it's probably one of the oldest student groups in LKY SPP. Uh-huh. And ultimately, Bridging Gap wants to establish a space for the LKY SPP community to discuss issues about gender and for people to share their experiences about gender.
So let's talk about you then. How did it all start for you? Right now, you're president of Bridging Gap. How did it start for you getting involved in Bridging Gap?
So how did I get started, or how did my interest in gender equality start? It kind of goes way back to when I was in secondary school. I went to an all-girls school in Singapore. And I think when you attend an all-girls school, you don't necessarily see stereotypes that people have with regards to like girls. And you really become empowered as women in school.
So thanks for sharing that, Adila. A pretty comprehensive summary of school. But after secondary school, did you experience anything that shifted you towards this direction of gender equality?
So after secondary school, I went to a mixed junior college. And that's when I started hearing a lot more sexist remarks about girls. And I saw how girls could be treated unfairly in that kind of environment. I remember vividly this incident that happened in school where some of the jocks in my school had actually created this list ranking the girls in our batch based on their appearances. And this list was being passed around the guys in our school. I just thought that it was ridiculous that this list was even being made. Even more ridiculous that it was being passed around to people, and it was basically objectifying the girls in our school. At the same time, I also had some really great classmates who were like on the same wavelength as me in terms of like their views about gender equality. And that was when I had the opportunity to really talk a lot more about things like feminism. So from then on, I became a lot more passionate about gender equality. When I went to university, I decided to minor in gender studies, and here I am now.
But okay, let's go back to the classroom incident where you said this list was being circulated. I'm going to strike a bit of controversy here and say, is that just not boys being boys? Is a bit of just harmless fun? Could it be viewed in that sense? Or you think, nah, this is a problem?
I think the boys will be boys narrative is actually pretty harmful, because it means that you will often just excuse boys for their toxic or offensive behavior. And to a certain extent, I do get that some boys just want to have fun, but I don't think it should be done at the expense of other people. Well, you're at that point in time, you're 17, 18, and you're becoming adults. And I think boys need to be taught that there are certain actions that are inexcusable, things like objectifying women. Because if they don't learn from a young age that these actions are wrong, if we simply keep excusing them because they're young, because they're boys, then these kind of attitudes will and behavior, they'll carry till they're adults. And it might manifest in other ways, other more damaging ways.
Okay. I'm really picking away at this incident because I think it's a really good story, which obviously gets me to understand your perspective. Is there any regret you feel in terms of not calling them out? If you could go back in time, would you have done something?
If I could go back in time, probably yes. But also bearing in mind, that was probably about 10 years ago. And at this point in my life, I feel like I've had a lot more experiences. I've built up a lot of my confidence in speaking up about these kind of issues. So if I could go back in time as myself right now, then maybe yes, because I would have a lot more confidence in speaking up about these kind of issues.
Okay, so I see where you're coming from. But back to this issue of objectification, do you think things have changed in school for girls and on the quest for gender equality?
Okay, I'm not entirely sure what goes on in schools these days. I know that what has changed over the years is that people have started talking a lot more about it. And I think social media has helped a lot in empowering or enabling marginalized groups to speak up about their experiences. And to some extent, I feel that these narratives that are being shared on social media do have the power to influence certain educational policies or the way schools run their programs or their lessons. But specific to things about gender, I'm not entirely sure whether there's been any change. I hope there is. I hope that after the whole Me Too movement, that schools have actually ramped up their lessons on consent. I know that that's something that I think schools have started introducing, though I can say that sex education in Singapore is still probably lacking.
Okay. So let's talk about the Me Too movement. Did it have an effect on you, like when you saw all this stuff happening?
Yeah, I think it did. It was really encouraging to see women speak up about their experiences. And in some way, I feel that it kind of showed me that it's okay to stand up for yourself and to speak up about these incidences. It made me a lot more confident raising these issues with maybe my bosses and speaking up about it or calling out / calling in friends who say anything misogynistic or sexist.
So what is the state of gender equality now in Singapore?
So the state of gender equality in Singapore, people always say that compared to other countries, women in Singapore have it pretty good. And I think to some extent that's true, but I don't think that that means we can stop working to keep achieving progress and to achieve a better society. There are so many other issues that are still happening in Singapore that still needs a lot of work. You have things from the unequal burden of care work or caregiving in Singapore. You have sexual violence. To be more specific, the proliferation of tech-facilitated sexual violence in Singapore. You have things like female genital cutting, amongst a whole range of other issues that still needs work in Singapore.
It's kind of interesting you mentioned that, Adila, because that's not the perception I, as a foreigner, have. In fact, prior to coming here, Singapore is often marketed as a very safe place. In fact, an especially safe place for women, particularly from the region of Asia.
I hear a lot from our international friends about how safe Singapore is for women, how they can walk alone at night without fearing for their lives. But at the same time, not everyone will share the same experiences. So that doesn't mean we should invalidate the experiences of other women in Singapore who have feared for their safety here.
So tough question here then. You just mentioned the safety of women in Singapore. Has your safety ever been threatened? Have you ever been confronted with anything like that?
So I've personally been followed home by an old man before. And so it was past midnight. I was going home and he followed me all the way to the lift landing of my block. Thankfully, he didn't follow me into the lift, but it was scary to the point that even till today, I'm still hyper-conscious when I'm going home late at night. I'm hyper-conscious of the footsteps that are following me. I find myself turning around a lot more when I'm going home at night just to make sure that no one's following me. And I also know a lot of my female friends would triple check to make sure that there are no hidden cameras in the toilet stalls that they're in, be it in school or in public spaces.
I'm really sorry you went through that experience, Adila. And it's sad to hear that your female friends still feel the need to check the bathroom toilets because of cameras and whatnot. But I wanted to ask a bit further. I mean, surely everyone's experiences are different, right?
It's really important to understand that the intersection of our identities would also lead to varied experiences here. So the experiences that a Chinese woman has would be different from what an ethnic minority woman might face. And same goes if, let's say, you're a super rich person, but you're a minority, ethnic minority group versus if you're a poor person from an ethnic minority group. I think these intersections are something that we really need to look at, and when we're looking at gender issues in Singapore as well.
Adila, thanks so much for sharing all that information about yourself and just really trying to understand and better explain what gender equality is. Let me shift it back to Bridging Gap. So I wanted to ask, what are your plans for Bridging Gap? What do you hope to achieve?
Maybe before I actually answer that, I'll just run through like some of the objectives that Bridging Gap has for the upcoming year. Mm-hmm. So there are three main focus areas that we have. The first is education, the second is advocacy, and the third is capacity building. Basically, what we want to do is we want to provide platforms for constructive discussions about issues of gender and policy. So want to raise awareness of gender issues and the importance of making gender-sensitive policies, especially among those who often feel that gender isn't a very important issue or it doesn't affect them. And lastly, we want to build the capacity of the LKY-SBP community in dealing with instances of sexual assault or harassment as peer supporters and as champions of gender equality.
Those are some pretty good and comprehensive objectives, Adila. Is there anything else or you or Bridging Gap is focusing on at this point?
Something that we also thought about is, what exactly is this gap that we are trying to bridge? I think specific to the LKY-SBP community, we really want to show that ultimately gender issues are not just a women's issues. Gender really affects everyone. We really want to work on this is that we've often noticed that in past Bridging Gap events, it's usually the women who turn up or who register for these events, but gender affects men as well. Things like toxic masculinity that isn't talked about as often enough. And secondly, as future policy makers, we need to remember to adopt a gender lens in formulating policies. We have to constantly think about how we can mainstream gender throughout the whole policy cycle. We need to ask questions like, will this policy disadvantage women in any way? And ultimately, I think for the upcoming year, we just want to raise awareness about these kind of issues or these things that people need to think about.
So thanks for sharing all of that stuff, Adila. And I think that's a really good and ambitious plan you've got there. You mentioned earlier, though, that the bulk of events that Bridging Gap hosts are attended by women only. So what about the men? What about the men out there? And who knows, maybe I myself am part of this category, the men out there who support your causes and support what Bridging Gap's about for gender equality, but generally tend to stay silent.
So that's exactly what Bridging Gap is trying to achieve. We're trying to get these men who are sitting on the fence where they're like, well, this doesn't really affect me. I don't really see why I need to be a part of it. And we're trying to show them a different perspective. Something that we're trying to do as well is having conversations with men who have been affected by gender issues versus men who have not been. When I say that gender issues also affects everyone, I don't just mean it in a sense where, oh, it also affects men. Gender issues also permeate in different kinds of other policy issues that we have, things like health, things like social isolation and loneliness, things like aging. There's gender inequality in all these other areas where it can affect men as well. And that's why I think it's important for us to simply just have conversations about this and get people's perspectives over why is it that they think gender issues are important to them? What exactly would make people more interested in learning about gender issues globally and things like that. Yeah.
Okay. Adila, thanks so much for sharing. And to say congratulations on becoming president of Bridging Gap and for giving the time today to talk to me about what Bridging Gap is trying to do. The key takeaways I got from it was that Bridging Gap's mission is on education, advocacy, and on building capacity. And I think that's very noble. And as you mentioned, the goal of what Bridging Gap is trying to do is to promote and make people aware of gender issues globally. So I think that's a wonderful thing. Once again, thanks so much for making the time today to chat with me. I hope this upcoming year is a success for Bridging Gap and that more people, men included, join the organization and participate in the activities that you organize.
Yay! Yay! Thanks, Dylan, for having me. It was quite fun.